Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Safe to say, Chris Christie's political career has had more ups and downs than a Jersey Shore roller coaster. After a week in which it seemed he was ascending to the national spotlight with the incoming Trump administration, Christie's fortunes took a downturn Friday as he lost his job as head of Donald Trump's transition team. Vice President-elect Mike Pence is now the chair, and Chris Christie is still part of the lineup, but he was demoted to vice chair and will serve in that position along with a number of other Trump supporters, including Newt Gingrich and Ben Carson. Chris Christie led the transition team for months, but it was a time in which he couldn't escape the shadow of the Bridgegate scandal. And now at least one prominent Democratic legislator is calling for impeachment proceedings. Here to lend insight to all of this is Kate Czernicki, national correspondent for The New York Times. Welcome back, Kate.
Thank you.
And Tom Moran is editorial page editor of the Star Ledger. Great to have you with us again as well, Tom. Tom?
Hello, can you hear me?
We sure can. Welcome back.
Okay, I just said thanks.
And as always, we want to hear your thoughts. The number is 888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or a tweet at @WHYYRadioTimes. So, Chris Christie is surely sorely disappointed with Friday's turn of events, but he's quoted as saying he was proud to have run the pre-election phase of the transition and that he's happy for the opportunity to continue to help lead, and that would be in the Trump administration. Tom, to you first, how would you characterize this development for Christie?
Well, it's pretty disastrous. We'll see how it turns out. But, I mean, first he wanted to be vice president and didn't get that. And this was some consolation that he was in charge of transition, where you would not just staff thousands of positions, but help formulate the 100-day plan, which is going to be particularly important for Trump. So now it's that position, too. And the question now is, are these reports we're hearing that he might get some other post true? Or is this something deeper? There's a lot of talk about Jared Kushner, who is a confidant and son-in-law of the president-elect, is furious with Christie and determined to turn him away from the administration, not give him anything good. Christie, when he was U.S. attorney, prosecuted Jared Kushner's father, Charlie Kushner, on tax evasion and tampering with witnesses and illegal campaign contributions. So the son is apparently still furious at Christie.
Kate Czernicki, what's your take?
I think that's true. I mean, one thing we always have to say with Christie is, you know, 99 lives, right? Like, this is someone who has been counted out. I mean, I can't tell you, I think I myself have written 3 stories about, you know, Chris Christie's worst week and Chris Christie is really done and, you know, the trial got him and then it was that he didn't get picked for vice president. So there may still be something for him. I do think the transition would have been just because of the sheer, it's a little bit like being governor of New Jersey, where you have incredible power to appoint people and to, you know, a whole range of positions. You know, as Tom pointed out, the transition, particularly for someone like Trump, who's never held elective office before, it's a huge position in Washington. So Christie really would have had enormous influence there. There was some talk, you know, there's some talk that he wanted to be attorney general. It's unclear that he would be, you know, survive the Senate confirmation for that because of the Bridgegate scandal. I think there was, you know, again, some talk of that he would be chief of staff, which is an enormously powerful position. That, of course, went yesterday to Reince Priebus from the RNC. So I think now, you know, other things that are being mentioned are commerce secretary. I mean, I think there still could be something there for Christie. And let's not forget also that, you know, in New Jersey, he will have some power, which is, I mean, I would imagine that they are at the very least going to rely on him to fill federal judgeships and the U.S. attorney position in New Jersey, which isn't quite what he wanted, but it is something.
Sure. So I've read in published reports that in the backstretch of the campaign, there was a distance between Christie and Trump that hadn't been there earlier. And in part, it grew because Trump wouldn't listen to Christie's counsel, especially regarding the notorious audio which was released regarding Trump's braggadocio regarding groping women. Tom Moran, have you heard of that distance between the two?
Well, I don't know about between the two as much as we saw in public that Christie at that point did distance himself somewhat from Trump and said, I won't defend him on this one. This is just horrible. But he still stuck with him and still was the transition chief. So it's hard to read their internal dynamics, you know, is anybody's guess. Maybe Trump will give us a 3 a.m. tweet about Christie and we'll gain some insight.
Yeah. Well, how much does Bridgegate have to do with Chris Christie's political fortunes in the Trump administration? Kate Czernicki?
So I think that's huge, but I want to add something to what Tom said, which is, I mean, I think the relationship between Trump and Christie has always been described as very transactional, right? These are, you know, Christie will say they're good friends, Donald Trump will say they're good friends, but it's sort of friendship to these people means something different than maybe what it means to you and me. In terms of Bridgegate, Christie himself has said that he felt that the Bridgegate scandal destroyed his chances to be vice president. I think it's probably more what Tom said about the Kushner relationship. I think Jared was really, from you know everything we've read and heard, Jared was really pushing not to have Christie be the VP. They were very much more in favor of Mike Pence. But I think the Bridgegate scandal just, you know, Christie's popularity, it seems remarkable to think about it now, was in the mid-60s after Hurricane Sandy, or Superstorm Sandy. It's now at 19%, 20%. I mean, it's just, you know, his approval ratings have completely sunk since the Bridgegate scandal. I think, you know, the first thing that damaged him was the Bridgegate scandal, and then it was this constant time out of state to run for president. And so the impression he's left the state with is that he doesn't care about, you know, New Jersey. It was interesting, over the weekend, or maybe it was last week, he was on the Today Show, and he said something about, you know, I've got a job. They were asking him what position he'd want in the Trump White House. This is before he was demoted from the transition team. And he said, well, you know, I've got a job to do. I've got to lead the transition. Every other time when he said, I've got a job to do, it's I've got a job to do running the state of New Jersey. He doesn't really talk about that much anymore. I mean, I think sort of, you know, my take has been for several months now, New Jersey's kind of done with Chris Christie and Chris Christie's done with New Jersey.
If you are loyal to Donald Trump, does it eventually somehow pay off, despite Kushner's attempts to perhaps steer the process otherwise? And also, despite the fact, Kate, it's amazing to some of us that Christie hung in there with Donald Trump because he suffered more than a few embarrassing moments at the hand of Trump.
That's true. I mean, I remember over the summer there was this when Pence was being announced as the VP, there were in the initial reports that they were going to do it at Trump National Golf Course in Bedminster, New Jersey, and it was sort of, you know, the ultimate insult to Chris Christie of New Jersey was that they were going to announce it in New Jersey. So no, I think that the humiliations have come over and over and over, and Christie has stuck with him. You know, Christie is a tactical politician. He saw this as his chance to stay relevant, and I think that's what he really wants to do. You know, going back to the Bridgegate, I think what will be interesting is there were some reports over the weekend that what really damaged Christie's standing with Trump was the testimony in Bridgegate, the testimony particularly from Bridget Ann Kelly, who talked about being bullied by Christie and throwing a water bottle at her and, you know, was tearful on the stand. And they said that Trump really didn't like that. Who knows if it's true or not, but certainly the testimony over 6 weeks in the Bridgegate trial is incredibly damaging to Christie. It was Tom was there as well. It was remarkable. Yeah. The degree to which the prosecution and the defense were constantly talking about the man who was not in the room, who was Chris Christie.
Tom Moran, you write for the Star Ledger a short time back regarding Bridgegate. It was tough to feel any sense of satisfaction from this, and this is regarding the convictions of Kelly and Barone. Yes, the system worked, you write, and the rule of law has been vindicated. Both Kelly and Bill Barone are now felons, but the big guy got away.
Yeah, that I think is the feeling of most people in New Jersey. Every poll on this shows that most people think that Christie is lying and that he knew about this, at least after it occurred. There was no testimony that he ordered it, but there were two people who testified he knew about it while it was going on and beforehand. And there were three others of his inner circle that said he learned of it later, way before his big mea culpa news conference in January, where he said, I was blindsided by this. Three of his close allies said that's not true. And so I think it confirmed for people what most people in New Jersey already believed, which is that he's lying about this. And if you do believe that, you take the next step, it gets really ugly because you have a mother of four about to go to jail based on his untruthful testimony. In other words, if he had said, yes, I knew about this, and taken the blame himself, Bridget Kelly wouldn't be going to jail, let alone Bill Barone.
Yeah. Were you
so
expecting
kind of a very ugly trend? The New York Post is the one that reported that disgusted Trump, and it was an anonymous source, so I don't put too much faith in that, especially when you consider Trump's personal conduct. I think I'm lining up with the Jared Kushner knife in the back theory more than that.
Yeah, Kate Zernike, your take?
Yeah, I think I'm probably with Tom on that, but I do think this is just incredibly damaging testimony. You know, there was always a lot of talk about before the trial. What was so fascinating about the trial was that this administration had been so secretive, and it was very hard to peel back the layers. And that's what the trial did. The trial just sort of opened up. You had top aides testifying about what was going on in the governor's inner office. And I think, you know, it was incredibly damaging. One of the things that was so damaging was there was always a lot of talk in this administration about loyalty. And it just seems like, especially with these convictions, loyalty to the governor appears to be a one-way street. He expects it. He doesn't necessarily give it. I think there was very much a feeling that he pushed these people under the bus.
Were you expecting a smoking gun during the trial? Kate?
Oh, I mean, was I expecting?
There was a lot.
I guess
of
I was
talk
expecting. Yeah, no, I wasn't expecting a smoking gun because I think going into the trial, what I understood was that Christie was not going to be on the unindicted co-conspirators list, which would have meant that he had involvement in the issue. Right? He was on the, you know, I don't know, the second or third list that as we talked about it, which was the list of people who knew about this. The testimony that we heard and the testimony that the federal government, the United States Attorney's Office, is standing behind is from David Wildstein, which is that Governor Christie. He learned of this on the third day of these closings, which happened for 5 days. So that means he learned on it midway through. He had the opportunity to reverse the closings, and he apparently chose not to.
So after
Kate, I just add to that, sure. The testimony was, remember, that they had that conversation about it at Ground Zero on the third day of the lane closures. But it sort of seemed to me like that was a conversation that referred to some earlier knowledge because they were joking about the mayor not calling and all this. So it sort of,
right. It was all very coded.
About it even earlier than that. Yeah.
Exactly. It was very clear that there was earlier knowledge because he said, you know, they said, well, you know, Governor, there's some really bad traffic problems in Fort Lee this morning. And then the conversation, you know, the governor continued they said the mayor's not having his phone calls returned. And the governor, as Wildstein testified, returned the conversation, you know, returned or spoke back in the same kind of sarcastic tone and said, oh, well, I can imagine he's not very happy not getting his calls returned. And Mr. Edge here, referring to Wildstein, you know, he would never do anything political. I mean, it was very clear, ha, 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 this was something they had talked about. This wasn't, he was not learning about this for the first time, so, which coincides with Bridget Kelly's testimony.
After Kelly and Barone were convicted, Christie says the scandal was, quote, one of the most abjectly stupid things I've ever seen. And he tells Charlie Rose, I mean, think about it. You know me. I'm pretty good at this political game. I'm up by 25 points in a re-election in a blue state, and they decide they're going to create a traffic jam in a town that's a Democrat town, and I wound up winning 2 months later in the election. Does this wash Tom Moran, and does Bridgegate somehow fade from the public consciousness as Christie's jockeying for a position in the Trump administration?
It could, and I think he's right that it was an insane move, but so was the burglary of Democratic headquarters that ignited the Watergate scandal. Mm. Nixon was equally just ahead. He was way ahead of McGovern at that time. You know, overzealous staff do stupid things. And the question in Watergate, as with Bridgegate, is when did the big guy learn about this and what did he do? And, you know, on that front, I think that I didn't expect a smoking gun for Christie because he wasn't charged, remember. Federal prosecutors stated that they believe he knew about it, but they didn't have evidence beyond a reasonable doubt. Because, as Kate pointed out, you know, this is the government's case depended all on David Wildstein. And the only people who were charged based on that testimony were the two people that were implicated in emails and tweets. They had to have other evidence to support his testimony because he's an admitted liar.
We're up against a break. More on Chris Christie's political fortunes just ahead on Radio Times. Keep it here. You're listening to WHYY in Philadelphia. This is Radio Times, and I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Joined this hour by Tom Moran, editorial page editor for the Star Ledger, and Kate Zernike, national correspondent for the New York Times and author of Boiling Mad, Behind the Lines in Tea Party America. And our focus this hour is Chris Christie, New Jersey governor, who threw his support behind Donald Trump during the primary season, and now the once seemingly doomed political career of Christie might be resuscitated with Donald Trump's victory. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, we invite you to do so. 888-477-9499 is the number, or you can send us a tweet at WHYY Radio Times. And speaking of tweets, let's get to this one from Marcia, who says, can't wait to hear about the possibility of impeachment of Governor Christie. Had always heard it was difficult under New Jersey law. So let's get to that. Impeachment proceedings maybe on the horizon. Senate Majority Leader Loretta Weinberg asking Assembly Speaker Vince Prieto to consider this following the Bridgegate convictions. Kate Zernike?
Well, it's interesting because during the trial, when I think everyone thought that Hillary Clinton was going to, you know, everyone in New Jersey thought that Hillary Clinton was going to win the election, people were saying, yeah, you know, even some of these same people who are now calling for impeachment were saying, oh, you know, he's only got, I guess it was 14 months left in his term. So, you know, it's an awful lot of money after, by the way, we've spent, the governor himself has spent upwards of $10 million in taxpayer money to hire a law firm that produced what is now clear from the testimony was a complete whitewash of the situation. So we've already spent all this money on Bridgegate. You know, why have impeachment hearings when the best we're going to do is shave a few months off of his term? Well, then Trump gets elected, right? And there's this, and Christie's the head of the transition, and I think this was clearly an effort to damage Christie as he's trying to scrambling to get out of New Jersey. So I think I personally don't think it's going to happen. I think it's very hard politically to get this done. You saw Republicans who were very loyal to the governor coming out and saying this wasn't going to happen. There was an interesting call also rejected from Ray Lesniak, another state senator, who said, let's have the attorney general, who of course is appointed by Chris Christie, let's have him appoint a special prosecutor to find out the truth about what the governor did. So again, that call was rejected. I think it's going to be very hard to do more on Bridgegate, anything that's going to get the governor to testify on this.
Tom, impeachment a remote possibility?
Very remote, I think. And the big thing is, even if the democratically controlled assembly votes by a majority to impeach him, the Senate needs 2/3 to convict, and the Democrats don't have those numbers. As up to this point, Republicans have been pretty fiercely loyal to the guy. And there is the timing question still. We're now down to like 14 months. And this would take several months, so, you know, you do question it, whether it's worth it. The bigger question to me is whether they'll even reconvene to the investigative committee to sort of get to the bottom of it. Because Christie, in his Charlie Rose interview, said about 14 things that were not true. And there are a lot of Democrats in New Jersey who want to set the record straight, especially when Christie in that interview talked about possibly running for president in 2020 or 2024.
Hmm. So, can I say one thing on the...
Sure.
Sorry, I was going to say on the things that he got wrong. I mean, just because we talked about this just before the break, this is one of my favorite, or to me, the most interesting things about this whole scandal. Christie can say now, gosh, why would I have wanted the support of a Democratic mayor? I'm a Republican. Who does that? It's a blue state. I was never going to win. But let's remember that their whole plan, and the testimony showed that this started in 2010, the year Chris Christie came into office, their whole plan was, we're going to get a broad range of support. We're going to win among Hispanics. We're going to win among women. We're going to win among Democrats. They wanted to bring over all of these people who don't normally support Republicans. They wanted to show that Chris Christie was the guy, the Republican, who could build this broad coalition. And that would help him make the argument in 2016, then 6 years off, that he was the guy who was best situated to win the White House in 2016. So it wasn't crazy. In fact, his whole administration was structured to get... To get endorsements from Democrats. Mm. This was whether or not Chris Christie knew about this before it happened. I personally think it sounds like he did, as we discussed earlier. There's no question that his office, that the sort of mission and culture of his office, and I don't mean culture in a vague way. I mean they had spreadsheets to track this kind of thing. It was all set up for something like this to happen.
All signs pointing to the White House.
Yes.
Okay. So tell us, as a brief aside, tell us about the goodie bag mentality, Kate.
So the goodie bag referred to the I think it was primarily the money that was available from the Port Authority. So the Port Authority had this, you know, essentially a regional bank where they could get money. And it's all supposed to go to Port Authority projects. The Port Authority district is 25 miles from the Statue of Liberty. Well, you had money going to, you know, parks in Essex County. You had money going to, you know, roadways to mayors that they were trying to cultivate. You had money going to, in one of the most interesting cases that came out, or incidents that happened, it came out in the testimony, you had someone who was running, who was expected to run for mayor of Jersey City. They had another candidate, another Democrat they wanted to run to win as mayor of Jersey City. So they got a donation to this state assemblywoman, I think, but Tom, correct me if I'm wrong on that, to her pet cause, which was a community center in Jersey City. So, just the money that was going to stuff it shouldn't have gone to. Nothing about transportation.
Yeah. So, in other words, all signs point to the right White House, and this particular strategy ends up encountering a giant pothole called Bridgegate. So,
Yes,
the notion that was one of the things. What Christie does on this topic is never talks to press from New York or New Jersey that have actually covered this stuff. He talks to national press. So, of course, Charlie Rose is a great reporter, but he didn't know this, that there's when he said, why would I go for Democrat? There was ample testimony, days worth of the governor's attempt to win support from Democratic mayors. Sure. You know, he didn't know that. So that's what he needed the spreadsheet about, because he was granting, you know, giant tickets and parks and all this stuff to mayors to get their endorsement. So that's beyond dispute.
It's tough to wade through. Yeah, there's an awful lot. All right. So let's get to the fact, again, as you'd mentioned earlier, Kate, that Christie's approval ratings are at a dismal, 19-20%. If he does accept a role in the Trump administration, he resigns as governor of New Jersey. What might Chris Christie be able to achieve anyway as a widely popular, unpopular, I should say, governor in his last year in office, Kate?
If he doesn't leave New Jersey?
Yeah. If for some reason his long plan just it falls to pieces and Donald Trump doesn't do for him what Christie is expecting and he stays on as governor through the election, what can he achieve as a widely unpopular governor?
I think we will be hearing a lot from him on Boomer and Carton on WFAN, which is Sports Radio New York. I mean, and I'm not entirely kidding. That's where he's, you know, that's where he went. That was his first public appearance after the notorious Trump video with the women. I mean, that was where he chose to make his remarks about Trump in that video. That's where he seems to appear most often. I mean, there's not. I don't know what he's going to try to get done.
Yeah. Well, you know,
everything has been so
still
directed politically. Sorry, Tom. Go ahead.
Just that the governor in New Jersey still has a lot of power by the Constitution. For example, he has line item veto on the budget. So any budget Democrats present him, he can line item specific items out. And as I said before, he has enough Republicans to block Democrats from overriding a veto or as with the impeachment. So he can still get a lot done, and I think he can make grand mischiefs, especially on school funding. He's proposed a radical restructuring of New Jersey's $9 billion, the biggest single item. The way we disperse that is we give poor cities a much larger share of help because they don't have property to tax and they have student body that requires more help. Christie's now running around saying every student, whether you're a rich kid from Alpine or a poor kid from Newark, should get the exact same amount of aid. That would result in Newark losing 2/3 of its state aid and massive layoff of teachers. So that's going to be a big fight, and he still has that weapon with line item veto. He may also provoke a fight with the Supreme Court over that, maybe even refuse the Supreme Court, cause a big ruckus like the governor of Wisconsin did, Scott Walker, and become a hero to the right. That's the fear here. But even if he doesn't do such a high-profile move, he can cause a great deal of mischief. I think most people are looking forward to him leaving, even if his detractors are glad to hear him having trouble. They don't want him here for another 14 months.
How does any of this affect Lieutenant Governor Kim Guadagno, who, you know, it's widely understood that she will run for governor. She hasn't announced. She and Christie have been at odds lately. But how could any of this affect her, Tom?
Well, in my view, her only hope is that he leaves and she gets a year in the governorship before an election comes. Mm-hmm. Because she's very closely identified. She's been a very obedient little house mouse, not making a peep about anything the governor did for 7 years until it's transparently opportunistic that she's now trying to create some distance. Even there, she's had some pretty serious stumbles, like this question, too, on devoting the revenue from the gas tax to transportation projects. She muddled this, came out against it, saying if you're against the gas tax, you should vote against this, which
and that
is fundamentally
didn't work.
Confused. The gas tax was already passed. Yeah. This wouldn't affect the tax. So I think she's got real trouble. She's so closely identified with Christie, and he's so unpopular. The only Republican who would have a prayer, and even that would be a long shot, would be someone who has credible distance from Christie, and that's Assemblyman Jack Chiatarelli, who is a virtual unknown.
Hey, Kate Zernike, why do you think it took so long for Kim Guadagno to distinguish herself from Chris Christie and emerge from his shadow?
Yeah, you know, it's so interesting because you say that they've had shown some, they've been at odds lately. I mean, you know, again, going back to everyone in our, you know, chattering class has sort of known for years that they were on the outs. And there was even some talk when Christie was up for re-election, you know, would he actually run with Guadagno again or would he pick a new lieutenant governor? So this has not ever been a cozy relationship. It came out again during the trial that from several people that the lieutenant governor was very much, as Bridget and Kelly famously put it, kept in a box. So why did she not come out against Christie? Because there was no his entire administration was on board with this plan to keep her pretty much quiet. She looked good for Christie. He had a woman running on the ticket. She was law and order. She'd been a federal prosecutor herself. I think she didn't have any. If she'd come out and spoken out against the governor, there was just, you know, she would have faced the wrath of his administration. Again, remember, he was hugely popular until 2014. So I just don't think there's any mileage in her for her in it.
Well, and as an aside, looking at her for a moment, some more, she refused to endorse Donald Trump. Does this now hurt her among some Republicans in the state? Kate?
Well, again, there.
Or Tom?
Okay. I'm sorry. She was on a robocall in Passaic County that we're still reporting out, in which she did encourage voters to vote for all Republicans from the very top, she said, to the very bottom. Mm. And that includes Trump. So I think there it's a little muddled, too, but we'll see.
So not a clear last-minute about-face then on her part?
No, she didn't come out and make a public statement, but people sent me this robocall, and it's clearly her. She identifies herself as her, and she endorses Trump on it. So I think that'll be another thing to tidy up.
What are the odds anyway that New Jersey, traditionally a blue state and coming off the Bridgegate scandal, is going to elect a Republican for a third straight term, or at least, you know, somebody with the Republican Party for a third straight term to the governor's office, Kate?
Well, I think, look, we see this nationally, too. You know, part of the reason I think that Trump won is that voters like to flip, you know, they like to flip the House every once in a while and just put the other party in charge. So I think, you know, I think she's got that going against her. I do think a year of incumbency would help her. It's very hard to get name recognition in this state because we have this divided media market between Philly and New York. There's no sort of central New Jersey media market. So I think it's very hard for. So I think a year in office would help her if Christie left. But I think more likely you've got Phil Murphy who's wrapped up a lot of these Democratic endorsements. He's got money. So I think you're right. The numbers have been, there traditionally been more Democrats among registered voters in New Jersey. We've seen, I believe, my understanding is that the increase in the voter rolls has also favored Democrats in the state. So it's really much more trending blue.
Okay, we're talking about a number of things, but really focusing in large part on Chris Christie this hour, New Jersey's governor, what his political fortunes might hold. I'll reintroduce our guests. Kate Czernicki is national correspondent for the New York Times. Tom Moran, editorial page editor for the Star Ledger. And lines are open at 888-477-9499. You can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org or a tweet at @WHYY Radio Times. And we have this comment from Roxanne, who says, probably nothing good for Christie, but since this year anything is possible, maybe things aren't so bleak for him. Tom Moran?
Well, he's not up for election anytime soon, so the question is trying to predict what might happen if he ran for president in 5 years or who knows on that. But I think Trump's election, anybody involved in politics now is sort of rattled to the point where whether you're on left or right, that we don't know what the hell's going to happen. So, sure, there's some ambiguity now.
Yeah. And Kate, what do you think?
I think that's true. And I think it also goes to Tom's earlier point about what's Christie going to do with his last year in office. You know, is he going to try to, around the time of the New Hampshire primaries, which was, of course, the state when he was running for president, the state that he was really, you know, putting all his eggs in one basket and trying to win that one. And he was talking a lot about recovery, drug recovery programs, and drug addiction recovery. And I think, you know, that's always been an initiative. I think he thought it would carry him farther in New Hampshire than it did. So we could see him trying to find some sort of signature issue. Again, the school funding thing he's really staked out a position. I mean, even I can tell you, I've covered education for a long time. Even conservatives are horrified at the level of spending he is proposing. But it's certainly getting his name out there. So he may just spend the next year, if he doesn't get some position in the administration, trying to build up his record here, leave office on something, you know, something less than total disgrace, which is pretty much where he is now. He may also go to Washington. The guy's not, he's still got many years left to have another act.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about his legacy. You know, a year before he does leave office, if he doesn't head to the Trump administration, the positive and the negative. Tom Moran, start with the positive.
Well, I think he had a very strong first term and sort of went crazy when he whiffed the White House after his reelection. But in his first term, he did important measures to contain public spending. And New Jersey faces a fiscal crisis that is still with us and would be even worse had he not done that. He cut pension and health benefits for public workers. He imposed a property tax cap. He changed the way union contracts are negotiated, the binding arbitration rules. He tried and failed to limit these outrageous sick pay payments, accumulated sick pay that some police officers are leaving with a $250,000, what they called a boat fund. So he was aggressive on that stuff, and that was the basis of his popularity. He also did some good education reforms, expanded charter schools in Newark and Camden. I think education is one of his surviving and pretty strong legacy, which is surprising that he's now going up to sort of trash his own legacy. All the charter schools that are doing well and that he sponsored would be the first to suffer under this plan. They, too, would lose two-thirds of their funding if they're in Newark and Camden.
Well, let me jump in. So, why is that? Why is he taking that turn?
I don't know. It has to be some calculation, political calculation, about what would work with the Republican base, because that's what we've seen in the second term. We saw an abandonment of that Christie, the one that everybody wanted to run in 2012 that made deals and compromises, was effective. We saw instead a fake right-winger who was, you know, rejecting gun control that he had supported. He originally said he got into politics in the 90s for the assault weapons ban. Suddenly he's, you know, on the side of the NRA on everything. Planned Parenthood funding, that started earlier, but he became more vociferous about abortion. He just was unconvincing as a fire breather, and I think that the Republican base saw that. You know, why go for someone who is trying to be a real fire breather when you have 18 other fire breathers in the race? But anyway, I would say for Christie, his second term is a disaster. His first term was successful.
You agree, Kate?
Yeah, and I think, look, you ask why. I think it's hubris. I think there's always a certain element of it. So it's you know, it's flying too close to the sun. I think that's what we saw with Bridgegate. They were trying to win Democrats. They went a little too far in trying to win them, and it became this enormous scandal. You know, again, with education reform, it's, you know, Tom is right that he has expanded charter schools, which I think appeals to, you know, not only Republicans, but I think there are a lot of Democrats who have signed on to that. I think a lot of Democrats supported the pension reforms. The problem is always that he goes one step too far, right? So he gets the pension, and then he says, well, we've solved this problem. And then, whoops, 2 years later, we're back saying, well, we didn't solve the problem. We actually don't have the money to pay for this. Yeah. I think people would have forgiven him that had he been honest about it from the front. But there's always this bluster. There's always this, you know, sort of the, you know, I don't know if it's quite the smartest guy in the room, but certainly the, you know, don't ever tell me that I'm wrong because I know what I'm doing here.
All right. New Jersey Governor Chris Christie is the focus of our discussion this hour. Kate Zernike, national correspondent for The New York Times. Tom Moran, editorial page editor for The Star Ledger. 888-477-9499 is the number to call if you'd like to jump into the conversation, or you can send us an email at radiotimes@whyy.org. Stay with us. More is just ahead. Welcome back to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. We are talking about New Jersey Governor Chris Christie and his political fortunes this hour. On Friday, he lost his job as head of Donald Trump's transition team. He is now a vice chair of that transition team. And we're talking about what the future might hold for Governor Christie. Our guests this hour, Tom Moran, editorial page editor for The Star Ledger, and Kate Zernike, a national correspondent for The New York Times and also author of Boiling Mad, Behind the Lines in Tea Party America. So might Chris Christie's political ambition eventually be his political undoing, Tom Moran?
Yes, I think that's exactly what it has been. As we were saying, in his first term, he was much more a moderate figure. In his second term, he jumped right to try to please the base, and I think that's the core of his problem. And then the ambition you see, aside from the political ideology and his willingness to shift, the ambition you saw in the Bridgegate trial was really, it almost turned your stomach. You know, they just didn't give a damn about the state. The Port Authority, understand, this is an organization with a budget that's bigger than 26 states. It's enormous. And New York and New Jersey puts huge money into this, and it's not well overseen, and both governors use it as kind of a slush fund. I mean, I know the Christie side of it better than the Sampson side, but this is just sort of horrifying misuse of putting the public second and his own ambitions first. It was stunning, and I think that the perception of him in New Jersey is frozen along those lines,
Kate,
is that he's self-interested.
Yeah, one of the things that came out, or actually initially during the legislative hearings on Bridgegate, and then again, I'm not sure it got raised in the trial again, but the, yeah, it did actually, because the mayor of Fort Lee talked about this. Fort Lee, of course, the town that was gridlocked by traffic because of the closings. But one of the things they did there was have they had Morning Joe come to Fort Lee and do a live broadcast from, I think it was the high school, and of course Christie was on the broadcast. And one of Christie's advisors during these legislative hearings said, "Well, this was I think he called it good constituent services or good government." And I thought, how is having Morning Joe, having the governor, you know, be the star of Morning Joe for the morning? How does that serve the people of Fort Lee? I'm just not quite sure. So as Tom said, everything was done in this kind of really crass political way. Everything was for the ambitions of Chris Christie. And if the public interest happened to go along, great. But in many cases, it really did not.
Right,
and
the,
if I can add, ahead, Mary, that in month after month through 2015 and the early part of 2016, he was gone from the state for the majority of days. And it wasn't as though things were all rosy in New Jersey. We were suffering credit rating after credit rating drop. And with the pension reform was melting down. Our job growth was way behind other states. And people were like, "Where the hell are you? Come do your job."
That hurt his poll numbers, right? So we saw the first drop in his poll numbers with Bridgegate, but then the second thing that really hurt him was he was just running for president all the time.
Does Donald Trump care about any of this, Kate?
Well, I don't know if any of us can really get inside the head of Donald Trump, but
reading the tea leaves.
Yeah, reading the tea leaves. I mean, I think, look, I go back to the Jared Kushner connection. I think that was an incredibly, I would imagine, no, it's never fun to be under federal prosecution, but that was an incredibly divisive episode. It really ripped a family apart. So this is now Donald Trump's son-in-law who was not well inclined toward Chris Christie.
We're supposed to believe that Donald Trump's sensibilities are offended by this, but he just appointed a guy as chief of staff who I'm reading some of Breitbart's headlines, which is run by his chief of staff. Political correctness protects Muslim rape culture. Planned Parenthood has Nazi roots. You know, the solution to online harassment is simple. Women should log off. Yeah. So I don't think it's Trump's sensibilities that caused Christie to, you know, his trouble.
I just think that Trump is, you know, Trump, like Christie, and this is sort of where, you know, you kind of get your comeuppance, right? I think Trump has the same sensibility as Christie, which is that I need you as long as I need you. You know, like, I'll be good to you as long as I need you. And I don't know that Donald Trump needs Chris Christie. He needed him in, was it February, when, you know, Chris Christie was the first real establishment Republican to come out and endorse Donald Trump. I don't think he needs Chris Christie anymore.
But and you get the sense, though, that at least to some extent, the loyalty that Christie showed him will pay off. And this is an educated guess I'm going to ask you. Tom, first to you, what might Chris Christie end up with in a Trump administration? What do you think he might end up with should Donald Trump decide to give him something? And I'm thinking, again, I think, Kate, you brought up the attorney general's job earlier. You know, if that happens, you know, Senate Democrats might filibuster. So really,
I cannot imagine that. I can't. I think that's where Bridgegate really hurts him. So I weigh in. But
yeah. Go ahead, Tom.
There are lesser cabinet positions that are discussed that would still require confirmation, though, like commerce. But I think Republican National Committee, that doesn't require any confirmation, and that might be a good fit. I'd be surprised, because you're right, Mary, there is a loyalty thing with Trump. Look at all these people he's appointing now, and he's taking a lot of grief for it today. But they were with him, and so was Christie. There was an extraordinary moment, and Christie took a big hit in his own popularity in New Jersey when he did endorse Trump.
All right, Kate, any thoughts of what, again, reading the tea leaves, the educated guess as to what Christie might end up with?
Well, I think he really wanted chief of staff or attorney general. I mean, he prides himself on being a former federal prosecutor, U.S. attorney in New Jersey. You know, there's so much that could happen. I mean, he could find some ambassadorship somewhere that, you know, was a great place to go for 4 years, for 8 years, whatever.
Far away.
Yeah.
All right. To the phones we go. Rose in Flemington, New Jersey. Welcome to Radio Times.
Hi, I just want to say that as a disabled person, I find it very, very difficult to believe that this governor had no conversations with anybody, didn't listen to the radio, and didn't have a newspaper. I mean, he's driven everywhere. He doesn't talk to his driver. And worse, he has basically lied to the people. Now, when you lie to the people and you go all over the place and you're running for president and you're giving away the situation with the tanks over there by the airport, which were poisoning the water, it's just real hard for me to believe that this man is not impeachable because he has lied.
And yet,
my biggest gripe is that we're going to get stuck with his legal bills. If we impeach him, we don't pay the legal bills. He can go bankrupt and go to Donald, who knows a lot about Donald, about bankruptcy.
All right, Rose, thank you so much for the call to Radio Times. Kate, what do you think?
So I think that's a good point. I think the problem with impeachment, as Tom mentioned earlier, is a political, it's a numbers game, right? So even if the Assembly, which is controlled by the Democrats, votes to impeach, it has to get through the Senate. We have Tom, correct me, maybe, I don't think we've ever seen a veto override from this Senate. We've never, you know, Republicans, as much as they might privately grumble about Christie, and it's taken a lot to get them to even do that, but as much as they might privately grumble, they are not willing to take a stand against him. So it's been quite striking how much his fellow Republicans have stuck by him. And so I think it would just be, you just wouldn't get the numbers to impeach. So I think people feel like, you know, maybe Democrats would feel, and this happened a bit with the legislative committee, people, you know, voters polled seem to feel that this legislative committee was not much better than the, you know, the master report that the governor commissioned to sort of whitewash the whole thing. I think people start to get frustrated when they see their money going to something that ultimately doesn't get the result that they want.
You know, it's amazing. That is a real hot button for people in New Jersey, and it's interesting caller should bring it up. It's now over, actually just tipped over the barrier. Matt Katz at NYC reported over $11 million now. Mm-hmm. I don't think we get that money back if there's an impeachment, though. I think she's wrong about that. That money's already been spent. That law firm got it. We'd have to claw back from them somehow. And how could you? They've done their job. They were hired to do a whitewash, and they did a good one.
Right. Over to Mike in Germantown, Pennsylvania. Mike, you're live on Radio Times. Hello.
Thank you very much. Sure. I'm a little puzzled. In one breath, they're suggesting that he should be criticized for taking so much time, you know, running for office and then as the transition team chairperson. Now they've reduced his need to be there to just a vice chairmanship, so he listened to the population. But it sounds like it's damned if you do and damned if you don't. Is there anything Chris Christie could do that you would applaud and say was good? Sounds unfair.
Tom?
Well, I just sort of rattle off a long list of things he did that I thought were good, but I think it's wrong to think that Christie is somehow rededicating himself to New Jersey and taking a lesser position within Trump's camp. I think it's more like he wants all he can get, and he's not getting what he wants.
Kate?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know that we're now saying that he's not that we're yeah, I don't know that he's saying I'm going to go to be back to be vice chair and I'm going to spend more time running New Jersey. Which I think is something that people could get behind, the idea that he was actually going to be governor of the state, that, you know, do the job he was elected to. I don't necessarily agree that there's nothing he can do that would be right. I think at this point, look, it's a human instinct, right? He's got 14 months left in his term. He can't run again. He's got to figure out his next move. And I think he has, for the last year or so, thought his next move was going to be within the Trump organization somehow.
All right. Mike, we appreciate the call to Radio Times. Thanks so much for your opinion. And I'd like to get to a comment from Jose, who asks, will Christie's legacy be about his relationship as a prosecutor? His administration was made up of prosecutors with a top-down approach. And I'm not that familiar with it, Tom. Is that on point?
Yes, it is. He got wide praise as U.S. attorney in Newark, where he served for 8 years. 7 years before he ran for governor. He was big on jailing corrupt politicians. And so he was popular at that point. And I think that will be part of it. He took a bunch of that staff with him. Most of his senior inner circle are former prosecutors that he came with, which is ironic to see them, you know, up testifying a federal trial about this corruption case.
Yeah.
So it hasn't worked out as he had hoped, you know, but it is true that it's all full of prosecutors.
All right. So back to those approval ratings. According to USA Today, Governor Christie says, well, the media were responsible for the public's reaction to him and that he couldn't defend himself. I guess this is during the Bridgegate trial because it would, quote, stain the judicial process. So, Kate and Tom, somehow I don't think you're going to take responsibility for Governor Christie's low approval ratings. All right, Tom, go ahead. Have at it.
Well, this notion, again, that I couldn't speak publicly about Bridgegate because there was a trial going on and before that a legislative inquiry that he didn't want to taint. That is beyond ridiculous. People who are under legislative inquiry and criminal investigation very often talk freely about it. There was no gag order. And at the same time, he spent this $11 million to hire his own internal investigation, which weighed in on every important question related to Bridgegate. This idea that he didn't do it out of some sort of restraint and decency is pure nonsense.
Kate, what do you think?
Yeah, no, it was interesting. I wrote about this in a piece I wrote last week. You know, at one point during the trial, I was out in the hallway and I overheard these court security officers talking about this internal investigation that the governor commissioned and spent $11 million on. And these guys were saying he needs to pay that money back because they had been sitting there listening to this testimony. They were, you know, they're voters, right? So they're sitting there thinking, wait a minute, that was completely wrong. This is being completely like that was a total whitewash. He's never been shy about saying what's on his mind. So the notion that he just, you know, was somehow, you know, was handicapped in what he could say, I think is just completely false.
He's had also, if I can add, he's had four senior people on his team convicted of felonies. The media can't make that up.
Kate, earlier you had referenced the water bottle story. It's Bridget Ann Kelly. Just to tell it for us again really quickly. And then also I'd like to just kind of get the sense of what we got during the Bridgegate scandal and the trial of how this administration worked in terms of influencing those who are working for Governor Christie, intimidation, as Bridget Ann Kelly charged on the stand.
Well, I think it was very much lockstep. So you had the governor was very involved in every decision. There was very little that he didn't know about. The water bottle story is that he came across as arrogant, which is he will certainly not be the first politician, by the way, to come across as arrogant. Yeah. But the story that Bridget Kelly told was that it was the day after the Seaside Park fire. And they were in a meeting with some small business owners, and Bridget Kelly, who was then deputy chief of staff, proposed to the governor. She said, well, what I thought we would do is have you introduce all of these small business owners, and then we would throw it to them, and they would sort of each tell their story. And he threw this water bottle at her, and he said, I'm not a bleep game show host, or what am I, a bleeping game show host? Anyway, so it was just this sort of like completely, you just didn't need to, you can, as they say, disagree without being disagreeable. This is an incredibly disagreeable move. But you heard a lot of that. You heard a lot of the governor's temper coming out. You know, he got really angry about the famous Krispy Kreme episode, right? So Bridget Kelly organizes this, a team building exercise among the summer interns. They're all going to have a bake-off. So one zealous intern brings in a box of Krispy Kreme donuts that has been reconfigured to say Krispy Kreme. And the slogan is expanding nationally in 2016. Now, so somehow someone gets a picture of this, puts it on social media. The Star Ledger sees it, does a story about it. The governor's office goes nuts. Not only did the governor's press secretary and chief counsel come and yell at Bridget Ann Kelly for doing this, but the governor himself came down and weighed in on this. Hmm. So the notion that the governor, who was involved on the Krispy Kreme episode, did not have any inkling what was going on with trying to secure Democratic endorsements is... Yeah. That just defies logic.
Okay, as we wrap up the hour, I'd like to talk again, look at Christie's possible role within the Trump administration moving forward. Tom Moran, Bruce Haynes is a Republican strategist who's quoted in the Enquirer as saying that the competition for high-level administration positions can often be brutal, those are his words, and that Christie would have to worry as much about what fellow Republicans might do to him as Democrats. Do you have a sense of that world and how Governor Chris Christie might react?
Well, he's a fighter, and he's not going to be a shy, retreating wallflower. If there is a fight, he will punch back, and he'll punch back hard. I mean, that's his style. As he said to Charlie Rose, you know, I came in loud, and I'm going to go out loud. And exactly where the knives are is a question. But when you play a style of politics like he does, that is sort of scorched earth, when you're popular. And then your popularity disappears and you're vulnerable. A lot of people come out of the woodworks, and we're seeing this in New Jersey too. Even Republicans who are like, that creep, you know, they used to push me around and now I'll take part in the kicking like Julius Caesar. Everybody sinks in a knife. So I'm not at all surprised to hear that other Republicans will gun for him.
And Kate, as we close the hour, your final thoughts?
Well, I think that's true. I think, you know, he's certainly wounded. So again, going back to the numbers game, I don't think we're going to see impeachment, but I do think that he has lost favor. He's been sort of exposed in many ways by the Bridgegate trial. But, you know, people have very short memories. So, I'll close where I started, which was 99 lives.
Yeah. Well, and we will certainly follow the developments of this story and bring you the latest here on Radio Times. And we thank you very much for joining us. Kate Czernicki, national correspondent for The New York Times, author of Boiling Mad, Behind the Lines in Tea Party America. I appreciate you coming back to join us, Kate.
Thank you.
And as always, Tom Moran, it was a pleasure. Thanks again for joining us as well. Tom, editorial page editor for the Star Ledger.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And also, when you get a chance, check out our Facebook page and podcasts. You'll find them at whyy.org/Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Great to have you along for today's Radio Times.